My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
James Wood went to high school at St. John's College High in D.C. for transferring to IMG Academy. 3-2 again on the way. Swung on, line drive, base hit through the hole in the left center field. Jeff McNeil up with it. He'll play it back. Time will be called, and the baseball will go to James Wood, who does the shimmy shake to the Nationals dugout. Listen to these fans here in the nation's capital for James Wood.
Charlie Slows last night on 106.7 The Fan. James Wood and his first at-bat ends in a single to left field. Right up the between the shortstop and second base. It was a great at-bat. It was a seven-pitch at-bat. He fouled off a 3-2 pitch and then went hard up the middle just to the left of second base for a base hit. Ended up 1-for-4. He walked once. He reached base on an error on another at-bat. James Wood looked good last night, didn't he, Denton?
Look real good. It was finally nice to see him in a Nationals uniform playing in the bigs.
He's a big boy at 6'7". And look, this would be huge for the Nats and for the city for so many different reasons if he ended up being the star that people project him to be. And how about, you know, just the Padres and what they must be thinking with Juan Soto in New York and James Wood here and other players as a part of the deal, you know, performing at a high level. He looked good last night. I did want to ask you this. He had a very loose-fitting helmet on his head that continued to fall off his head every time he made any kind of movement, whether it was a swing or running. Is that more a style thing, or are they, you know, did they not have a helmet that fit his head last night for his debut?
You know, it, the more I look at him, the way that he's running, it almost looks like they just didn't have a helmet that fit his head. I mean, as you mentioned, big dude, got a lot of hair. Maybe they weren't prepared for that.
It seemed to be a bit distracting, as, you know, almost every swing the helmet would come loose and either fall off his head. He actually would catch it, you know, with his offhand. But James Wood, 1-for-4 last night, reached base three times, actually, in the game, including in a crazy 10th inning. The game went to extras at 3-3. The Mets absolutely lit up Hunter Harvey in the 10th and took a 6-run lead. But the Nats got close. I mean, Luis Garcia Jr. was up with Two runners on, down 9-7 in the bottom of the 10th, but they did not get it done. He struck out, and the Nats lose again. That's six out of the last seven, 9-7 to the Mets last night, who now are at 500. The Mets have played great baseball over the last month or so. Good morning, everybody. So that was an exciting game. I watched the entire game. I watched every James Wood at bat last night. Wanted to see what the scene was like. The broadcast continued all night long to say it was about as big a turnout media wise as they've had in several years at Nats Park. A lot of Mets fans, you could tell in the park per usual when they play here in Washington, but look, he is part of the future. Hopefully Dylan Cruz gets called up at some point. We get a chance to see him. I'm a little bit upset that the Nats are really falling a little bit out of what we had been talking about for a month, which was, you know, an in contention for a wild card spot team. There's plenty of time to go, but they have hit a rough skid here, losing six out of their last seven. They're now 4.5 games out of the wild card race, and they are solidly behind the Mets in the division. The Mets are at 500. The Nats now 3 games behind the Mets in fourth place in the division. And I think it would kind of suck if they fell completely out of it, because it seemed like for a while we had a chance to have at least something to get excited about in July and August. But they have not played well here recently. Some of the games have been close. Some of them have been difficult losses. But last night, James Wood gives you something to be optimistic about in the future. We've got a couple guests on the show today. Bobby Blanco, who was there last night, covers the Nats for Masson, will join us at 10:35. Josh Robbins, who covers the Wizards, will join us at 11 a.m. We'll talk NBA free agency and Wizards planning here in free agency with Josh at 11. And then Quincy Wilson, the 16-year-old track star from Bullis in Potomac, who is qualified for the Olympics on the 4x400 relay team. His track coach at Bullis, Joe Lee, will be our guest at noon. Looking forward to that conversation. We'll find out a little bit more about Quincy Wilson. I mean, look, two of the storylines in Paris this summer will be, of course, Katie Ledecky, but Quincy Wilson will be part of that story. At 16 years old, the youngest track and field participant in U.S. history in the Olympics. I got this from Dell. Dell wrote, Denton is right. Brandon Ayuk is all over the place, and I'd be concerned. And then he sent me a link to a Brandon Ayuk story shortly after he did the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark on Friday, where, you know, he talked about and really almost implied and in some ways hoped that he would get traded to Washington. And he had all the nice things to say about Jaden Daniels, focusing on Jaden Daniels' key attribute, which was his leadership more than anything else. But a day later, and I didn't see this story yesterday on Saturday, TMZ caught up with Ayuk at LAX, at Los Angeles International Airport, and they asked him if he wants to stay with the 49ers this season, and he said, quote, for sure, and then said it with emphasis, for sure. And he, you know, this is a guy that's kind of playing a lot of different sides and having it play out in public. I mean, we've had the TikTok posting of Ayuk's video conversation, a Zoom call or FaceTime call with Jaden Daniels. We've had his comments in various places, including the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark. And at the same time, you know, he's telling TMZ, of course he wants to go back to San Francisco and he wants the deal done. Look, he did, you know, lay out the odds. 49ers the favorite, Washington the second favorite, Pittsburgh the third favorite, with Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor on that podcast Friday. But, you know, Denton, according to Dell, may be onto something, that this guy is getting to be a bit too much with this contract negotiation and the potential for it to go south and to get traded. And I'm feeling some of that as well. You know, there's, I think when you have somebody that is, you know, so public about his situation, and by the way, not schizophrenic necessarily, but, you know, back and forth, you know, in terms of, you know, indicating that he'd like to be traded, then he wouldn't like to be traded. And, you know, clearly, you know, they don't want me back and I'd love to be back. You just don't, you know, you get to a point where it's a bit much when you are so public and so all over the place with this. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a red flag with him. That's for sure. That's it on Aiyuk today, unless he does another interview at this point. Most of you actually don't want an Aiyuk trade. We did that poll, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, and I think it was like 53-47. Those of you that did not want it were in the slight majority versus those that did want it. But still think the odds heavily in favor of Aiyuk staying in San Francisco. All right. Friend of mine sent me this morning because I was not familiar or did not pick up on the fact that this is an anniversary date. 4 years ago today, Fred Smith, the founder, the CEO and chairman of Federal Express, and at the time, a minority shareholder in our Washington Redskins, 4 years ago to the date, July 2nd, 2020, FedEx, and I'll read it from the CNN story that day. FedEx, a major sponsor of the Washington Redskins, is asking the NFL team to change its name in response to growing pressure from investors who oppose the name's racist connotations. Quote from FedEx in a statement, "We have communicated to the team in Washington our request that they change the team name," closed quote. The Redskins responded with a statement, quote, "The team will undergo a thorough review of the team's name," closed quote. Good God, did this shake the earth in our area. This was a bombshell. And it was the beginning of the end. It led to eventually, 11 days later, the team retiring the name and logo. It did not take long. Once Federal Express and Fred Smith said, change it, 11 days later, it was dropped. And since then, we know what's happened. There have been two additional names, and a lot of the passion for the franchise, which was already at the lowest levels it had ever been at, it dropped even further. Now, the sale of the team obviously lifted the spirits of many in the fan base. And even, you know, today, we are more optimistic as fans than we've ever been. But the predictions that a name change would somehow spark a boon, you know, a financial bonanza for the franchise was the claim of people that knew nothing about business, knew nothing about emotional brand attachment. And we've seen an emotional disconnect from this team with a large percentage of the fan base. And it is, as we sit here today, 4 years later, one of the biggest issues right now with the lack of passion in the current team. Something that I do think will be addressed, as I've talked about previously, I do think that Josh Harris and Mitchell Rales and Magic Johnson and the 20-plus owners of this franchise, they know that this is a big issue. But as I have discussed, you know, many times over the last month, month and a half, they're not going to address this until there is a clear path to RFK for the new stadium. All it would take is just a couple of no votes from people who looked at the process of deciding to change the name and potentially to Native American imagery. They're not going to muck this up. It is build a really good team, with a really good football operation. Let's get back to D.C. with the next stadium, and then we'll get to the name. And that is what they are waiting on. I absolutely expect, once there is more clarity with the stadium, that we will get something from Josh Harris and company on the name. But they're not going to, you know, put anything out there that could potentially mess up the path back to RFK, which, by the way, is already messy, courtesy of Chris Van Hollen, according to reports from Tom, you know, Lavero, who was the first to break the story that Chris Van Hollen was a major impediment in the Senate for the RFK site bill, and the issue related to the logo and the Wetzel family and the senator from Montana, Steve Daines. It's already, you know, littered right now with obstacles to getting D.C. done. But they're not going to address that, the name, until there is resolution on the new stadium, wherever that ends up landing. But 4 years ago today, Federal Express, Fred Smith, said, no way. And you know, it had nothing to do with the summer of 2020. In the wake of George Floyd, certainly the conditions made it easier for Fred Smith to go after that, but that's not the reason he went after the name. It's possible that, like with Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben's rice and everything that was getting swept up in the cancel culture of the summer of 2020 and the months that followed it, that the team name may have been swept up in that anyway. It is possible, I guess, but the bottom line is Dan Snyder was screwing his minority shareholders. Schar, Rothman, and Smith were not being given access to the books. They were not being paid their dividend checks. And the team had, remember, taken out a $55 million loan, a secret $55 million credit line, without the knowledge and required approval of Snyder's minority partners. That had happened in April of 2020, and they were being shut out of the books, dividend payments, and it was Snyder's shenanigans that essentially got Fred Smith so pissed off that he said, really? Okay, guess what? I'm going after the thing that'll hurt you the most. And he did. And once the, you know, top level revenue producer, you know, sponsor bailed or threatened to bail, others jumped on board, PepsiCo, Bank of America, and others, because it was the thing to do in the summer of 2020. Fred Smith started it because Dan Snyder was screwing him. What I don't know, and I think it's interesting to just consider, is if Snyder hadn't treated his minority shareholders the way he had been treating them, and Fred Smith hadn't come after the name because there was a relationship there that was at least satisfactory to him and the other two minority shareholders, because they had long decided that Dan was not a good owner and that they were part of a loser organization. There were discussions previous to 2020 about either selling their share or trying to buy the whole team, you know, from Dan. They knew that they were part of a loser, but their investment continued to increase in value because it was a significant stake in an NFL team. But if Dan had opened his books, had paid the dividend checks to his minority shareholders, hadn't engaged in a secret, you know, $55 million credit line, if he had, you know, acted more responsibly with his minority shareholders, and Fred Smith had not gone after the name, would the name still be here today? I don't know the answer to that, man. I don't know, because the other question would be, would Dan still be the owner today? You know, ultimately, I think we all would have chosen Dan to be gone, even if it meant a brand change. Although it was close. It was close. Look, the investigations into the toxic workplace were really what brought Dan down more than anything else. But I do think and wonder whether or not Dan's fight to keep his team would have been more passionate had the team still been the Redskins, had the uniforms and the branding still been the same. I think he lost interest once the name was lost, like a lot of longtime fans. He looked at it and said, well, this isn't the team I've owned forever, for 25 years. What do you think I could get for it? I don't know if he would have been asking that question had the name still been in place. I don't know if the league would have forced him out, if the fight would have been more, more difficult for the league with Dan. Ultimately, it wasn't easy to get him out. And the sale itself wasn't an easy negotiation. But it all started with the behavior of the franchise more than anything else. And ultimately, what the Post uncovered with that first story, which came a few weeks later in July of 2020. And that sparked one investigation after another that had nothing to do with the team name and had little to do really with his treatment of his minority shareholders. You know, there was a lot for him to overcome even without the mistreatment of his minority shareholders and the loss of the name courtesy of Fred Smith and Federal Express. So that was his biggest obstacle to keeping the team. But I wonder, man, if he had treated those minority shareholders more appropriately and more professionally, would Fred Smith have gone after the name? No, is the answer to that. Would the name eventually have been lost? I don't know. There were a lot of things during that summer of 2020 that were getting swept up. And it was one of those things that a lot of people wanted changed. But let's face it, when we got to 2020, the issue had died down. The poll in the Post in 2016 really quieted the conversation for a few years on the name. When the Post revealed in that poll, no matter how flawed many of you think it is, or some of you think it is, the bottom line is 9 out of 10 Native Americans polled said they didn't find the name to be insensitive at all. And that was the mic drop for those who wanted the name to stay. And for a few years, the issue really died down. Fred Smith made sure that it was brought back. And it was the death blow. It was the environment of the summer of 2020, but it was really Dan's treatment of the minority shareholders that allowed Fred Smith in that environment to go after something that he knew would hurt badly. And he did. I don't blame Fred Smith. I blame Dan Snyder for the mistreatment of his minority shareholders. For, you know, the mistreatment that was, you know, clearly ended in a litigious battle. You know, there's more to come, I think, with the minority shareholders, with ultimately what they were bought out for versus what the team was sold for just a few years later. But it is interesting to think 4 years ago, man, what a different world this was 4 years ago in so many different ways. We were 4 months into COVID at that point. And the team name was lost. I'll never forget that day 4 years ago, because I knew, as most of you did, that may be the end of it, because it was always going to be, you know, dollars and cents influenced. Once corporate sponsors said, we're not paying anymore until that name gets changed, which they had never done previous to Fred Smith leading the charge 4 years ago today, the name was going to stay. But again, it's interesting to consider whether or not it would have fallen anyway in the environment of so many things that were, you know, perceived to be controversial or racially insensitive that were getting swept up at that point anyway. 4 years ago today, Federal Express said, we have communicated to the team in Washington our request that they change the team name. And here we are, 4 years later, the Commanders in scarlet, maroon, black, you know, what other, well, you know, the other colors. I don't even know what the colors are at this point. All right, we'll talk Nats with Bobby Blanco, who was there last night for James Wood's debut. Got a lot of other things to do as well. I want to talk Klay Thompson's deal with Dallas when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Finds Draymond Green. Green to the basket, kicks it out of Iguodala. Thompson for three. Bang! Klay Thompson from downtown. It's a 6-point lead. Timeout Rockets.
Klay Thompson left Golden State yesterday for a 3-year, $50 million deal in Dallas to join the Western Conference champion, Dallas Mavericks, ending a 13-year memorable run with a 4-time champion, Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are, as we know them, are over. It's going to be really interesting, and we had Jeff Wilgett from USA Today on the show yesterday, and I asked, I think the biggest fallout from all of this is Steph Curry at 36 years old. How does he end his career? Does he really end it on a team that's not a contender? And when I say not a contender, like barely even a playoff contender. They finished in 10th this year. What are they going to be in these final 3 or 4 years of Steph Curry's career? I would imagine Steph Curry at some point is going to jump and go somewhere else. But the Klay Thompson signing is maybe the most interesting of this crazy first, you know, day and a half of free agency for these reasons. Number one, it marks the end officially of, you know, Golden State. The Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green for 2 years, Kevin Durant, 6 finals appearances in 9 years, 4 titles. Just, it was dynastic. The Warriors were the last, you know, dynasty in this league for the last 5 years. We've had different champions. We've had different finalists each of the last 5 years from the year before. But I think what's really interesting is what this says about the state of the Los Angeles Lakers, Denton. The Lakers wanted Klay Thompson badly in free agency. LeBron's Lakers wanted Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson, for those of you who don't know this, his father was Michael Thompson. He was a big part of a few of the Lakers championship teams in the 80s. He grew up in LA. He grew up watching his father play for the Lakers. This was his franchise. He's a Southern California kid. And a lot of people thought he would be back with the Lakers. He would go back home and play for the Lakers after 13 years in Northern California playing for the Warriors. But he said no. Now, some people will say, well, it's all about state tax. Look, the money's comparable if you look at the two offers, even though Texas doesn't, you know, have state tax. And he wanted, you know, a little bit more value to the three-year $50 million deal. Klay Thompson wants to win. The Mavericks are close to winning a title. It's a good fit for him, too, to play off of Kyrie and Luka, to essentially just be a catch-and-shoot three-point guy, which he will be in Dallas. But, you know, it goes back to this feeling that the Lakers are no longer the Los Angeles Lakers. They're the LeBron Lakers. He got the coach, his podcast partner, J.J. Redick. They drafted his son in the second round. Some of you might say, well, he's earned that, LeBron has. But there's a lot of discussion about this proud franchise, the Lakers. First of all, the Celtics just passed them in titles. This team's nowhere near winning a title. They have not finished better than sixth in 9 years in the Western Conference, even though, as a sixth seed, they did win the title in the bubble in 2020. And LeBron made that happen. I mean, LeBron did bring the Lakers another title. But these are the LeBron James Lakers. They're no longer the Los Angeles Lakers. And Klay Thompson didn't want that. He didn't want to play with LeBron, didn't want to play for a coach who's never coached before in J.J. Redick, didn't want to play on a team that drafted LeBron's son instead of, you know, somebody who could actually potentially help sooner. And he went to Dallas. Really interesting, the state of the LA Lakers right now. They have chosen to go down the path of giving LeBron everything he wants in the twilight of his career. And look, he was great last year. And you can make the case, look, they were in the Western Conference Finals in 2023. You know, in this most recent playoffs, the series they had, even though they lost in five games to Denver, was a highly competitive series. If they had gotten Oklahoma City in the first round instead of Denver, you wonder, would the Lakers have won that series? Could they have made a deep run again, at least to the Western Conference Finals? I don't know. LeBron was sensational this year. He's gotten better, as I've talked about all season long, in so many different ways. It's crazy to watch how great he is at his age, 39 years old. But Klay Thompson, thought to be a natural to go to the franchise that he grew up rooting for, to his father's franchise, to fit in with LeBron and Anthony Davis and Austin Reeves and make a run at something next year, he goes to Dallas. You know, he had a better season this year than I thought, Denton. I looked this up last night. You know, he essentially was demoted at times by the Warriors this year. Remember, there were games in which he wasn't in there at the end of close games? He still shot 38.7% from behind the arc and averaged 18 points a game. You know, it was far from, you know, a terrible season for, you know, a shooting guard. But the Warriors are, you know, it's over. I mean, it's kind of been over. But what does Steph do, man? 36 years old. Does he just play it out, loyal to the Warriors? The NBA doesn't have loyalty anymore.
No,
he's got to move right next year to someplace else where he can, you know, play out his final 2 years on a team that can win it all.
Well, that or you just... you play this year out, and maybe you hope that they can make a big move or a big swing. And if not, hey, I'm done. Calling it quits. I mean, you mentioned he's in his late 30s. He has all the money in the world. He does stuff outside of basketball. So maybe we're seeing not a guy that's going out kicking and screaming, but a guy that's saying, hey, I'm done. I'm going to walk out on my own terms.
Yeah. You rarely see a player of Steph's status play his entire career in one place. It just doesn't happen in that sport, ever. Not in this century, anyway. And so, is he going to really play out the last two or three years of his career on a team that barely can qualify for the postseason? I mean, who are they going to add next year to become a contender in that Western Conference?
Now, that is a great question. Hey, what's Kawhi going to do?
Yeah, you can't rely on, as much as I'm a Kawhi guy, you can't rely on him. Can't rely on Paul George. More, we talked about this yesterday. The more I think about it, man, there are a couple of things. He hasn't stayed healthy. He's not elite, okay? He's not, I mean, is he better than Tobias Harris? Yes. The bottom line for the 76ers is Joel Embiid, period. You have to have him be 100% healthy and have a decent seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs if you're going to be a championship contender. The other part of it, and I heard Legler talking about this, and I'd kind of forgotten about this, but God, he nailed it. You know, Paul George has had some issues with big-time games and coming up woefully short in the postseason over his career. Man, you want an absolute pressure cooker environment for a guy like Paul George? Philadelphia. He better perform with this contract in Philadelphia in the games that matter next postseason. Because if he has a couple of the duds that he had in L.A. and other places during his career, it doesn't, you know, they're not a charitable group up there. Up next, Bobby Blanco from Masson talking about James Wood's debut last night. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Major League Baseball, Nationals fall to the Mets 9-7 in 10 innings last night. All eyes were on James Wood. He went 1-for-4 in his first Major League start. This lone hit being a single. The two teams square off tonight at 6:45. DJ Hertz on the mound for the Nationals. In the Copa America, Team USA falls to Uruguay 1-0. That ends their run in the Copa America. Disappointing finish for Team USA. As Kevin was just mentioning, Klay Thompson, the NBA, signed a three-year, $50 million contract with the Dallas Mavericks. The Warriors have already announced that they plan to retire his jersey when he hangs up the shoes. Donovan Mitchell re-signs with the Cleveland Cavaliers, 3 years, $150 million this morning. And last night, Jason Tatum set an NBA record with a five-year, $314 million deal in Boston. And that's what's trending.
James Wood went to high school at St. John's College High in D.C. for transferring to IMG Academy. 3-2 again on the way. Swung on, line drive, base hit through the hole into left center field. Jeff McNeil up with it. He'll play it back. Time will be called, and the baseball will go to James Wood, who does the shimmy shake to the Nationals dugout. Listen to these fans here in the nation's capital for James Wood.
That was the first at-bat for James Wood last night at Nats Park against the Mets. He was 1-for-4. He reached base three times. That single, walked once, and also reached on an error. Bobby Blanco covers the Nats for Masson. You can follow Bobby on X on Twitter at Bobby_Blanco, B-L-A-N-C-O. I wanted to ask you first and foremost, you know, the scene last night, I'm listening to a lot of the pregame and during the game, and it sounded like it was an unbelievable media turnout, A, and a real, you know, electric crowd for James Wood's debut. Describe it.
Yeah, it was. And I have to be completely honest with you. I actually wasn't there.
Maybe something we should have found out before we had you on, but that's okay,
yeah.
Bobby.
Well, my wife and I actually moved yesterday, and I knew as soon as we picked this date and then James Wood was activated off the IL that he was like, you know what, this is going to line up where he's going to make his debut at Nats Park, isn't it? And sure enough, But I was watching online. I was watching on Masson, and I heard a lot of the radio call as well. I mean, the crowd looked great. I mean, for all the reports, it looked like the Nationals did a really good job of one, letting the news get out early last week, allowing fans to buy tickets, you know, having the T-shirt giveaway, stuff like that. So I give the Nationals a lot of credit for letting fans enjoy this moment with them and with James, because the crowd did seem electric last night, even on the radio, even on TV. And, yeah, the media frenzy was crazy. I mean, I know that most of the time you get pregame, we get pregame interviews inside the clubhouse. There were so many media members there that they had to pull James out into the hallway and do it in front of a banner because there were so many people there. And that just kind of shows the top-level prospect that James is and the kind of hype that comes around him, not to mention the fact that he's sharing the field with C.J. Abrams. Mackenzie Gore was on the mound, three central pieces to that Juan Soto deal from 2 years ago. So, yeah, James is the highest-ranked prospect in the Nats system. Some publications have him already as the number one prospect in all of baseball because Jackson Holliday has been hurt. He struggled in the majors. Paul Skeens is close to graduating by some standards with the Pirates. So you're looking at one of, if not the number one prospect in the entire sport, making his major league debut, and he flashed all the skills, right? I mean, it was really fun to watch. I know the loss kind of dampers the evening, but James did everything he could to help that team win the game. He just needs some help from his new teammates, right? I mean, he got on base so many times. That first single was a very impressive at-bat. He works the count full. He fouls off a pitch, and then he goes the other way against the lefty, which was the knock on him this year, was that they wanted him to hit lefties. And, of course, his first major league base hit is an opposite field single against a lefty. So that was really cool to see. The walk late in the game was an impressive at-bat as well. I think, Kevin, for me, the thing that really stood out, and watching it live on TV, was just the overall skill that he has, the chopper back to the mound that he runs down the baseline, the pitcher kind of, you know, he's so fast, he gets in the way of the
really
pitcher
is.
Almost. He's so fast. I mean, it's incredible to watch. And here's how fast he is. So he goes past first base. The ball gets past Pete Alonso at the bag. His helmet falls off. He actually tries to catch his helmet and put it back on before running to second. And there's a great shot from the Masson camera and the third base camera well, where you can see James, he has stopped his momentum. He's looking at the ball, and the right fielder already has the ball or is about to pick it up. And that's the moment he decided to break for a second, and he gets there pretty easily. I mean, the speed that he has in that moment to make that decision and then get to second base quickly and safely was just very impressive. And that I think that was the cool part of the night, was that he flashed all five of his tools that make him the best prospect in the sport.
Look, we may have buried the lead here. How was the move? How did the move go?
The move, you know what? I think I had a longer day working with the move than I would have if I was at Nats Park.
There's nothing worse than moving, right?
There's nothing worse than moving. We still got some boxes and stuff to put away throughout the course of the day, but yeah. I will be back at Nationals Park and saying hello to James tomorrow night. I can't wait. But, yeah, the move is slow but steady, and I think definitely harder than covering a baseball game.
You know, Bobby, you mentioned something, and I mentioned it to Denton at the beginning of the show. What was the deal with his helmet? It just, every movement, every swing, every, you know, run, the helmet would not stay on his head.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's, you know, C.J. Abrams kind of has the same.
Exactly.
It's all these guys that are just fast. You know, Lane Thomas sometimes, Jacob Young sometimes has an issue with it. I've actually asked Davey Martinez about this, and he just mentioned, you know, sometimes they wish they would just knock the helmet off and just run. Like, they don't, they worry so much about it. And it kind of slows them down. I think I've seen CJ get picked off or caught stealing at second, or maybe even like thrown out for a double a handful of times because he slows himself down trying to keep the helmet on. And Davey Martinez is like, just knock it off and run. Like, who cares? Like, it's allowed to fall off your head. You don't have to keep it on once you're running. So, yeah, it is kind of a funny thing that this is they can't seem to keep the helmet on. And I do kind of wish at times they just like let it fall and keep playing. I know you want to be safe, and obviously the head is the most important part of your body to keep safe. You don't want to get hit or anything, but at the same time, if it's slowing you down and you have an easy stand up double, take it off.
Yeah, I think I said to Denton earlier, and I forget if it was on the air during the break, but I said, you know, C.J. Abrams has that issue a lot, too, in watching him. And I wonder if it's something that they think looks good. To me, last night with Wood, it actually appeared to be a distraction or, you know, a bit of an unnecessary diversion for him. You know, why should you be worried about after a swing and a miss catching your helmet or running and trying to affix the helmet to your head so it doesn't fall off? It seems kind of absurd in so many ways. But I'll tell you, you mentioned something, and I didn't mention this at the beginning. His size is obviously something that stands out. But man, can he move for a guy his size? I mean, he is 6'7", close to 250, right?
Yep, 6'7", like 230 plus at least. And the way just watching it, I can't wait till he gets his first extra base hit because you're going to see him go from first to second probably in the blink of an eye. I mean, he takes some unbelievably long strides for his size and quickly too. I mean, it's not like slow. You know, sometimes you see like a 6'7", like forward in basketball, kind of slow up and down the court. No, he is getting his feet up and down in a quick manner and getting there quickly. The athleticism, that's the crazy thing too. He is that size, and he has the athleticism that could probably play every day at center field. The Nationals don't want him to do that right now. Also, they have arguably the best defensive center fielder in baseball and Jacob Young playing there every day. But James could play there every single day right now. And that's so much ground he covers, plus the base stealing potential, plus the extra base potential. I mean, he's one of those guys like C.J. Abrams that could turn a single into a double, no problem, which is just crazy to think that he has the same speed that C.J. has, and he might be like, you know, half a foot taller.
Did he play? I know he played basketball at St. John's. Actually, the St. John's coach for several years was Sean McAloon, who then became the head coach at IMG. And he's an excellent, excellent high school basketball coach. I mean, I thought he was one of the best in the area when he was here, and he's probably considered to be one of the better coaches in the country. Did he play basketball at IMG?
Yeah, I'm a Gonzaga guy, so I try to forget his basketball time at St. John's. I think he might have played one year, his junior year. I think his senior year he switched to full-time baseball.
Okay. We are talking to Bob. Yeah, we're talking to Bobby Blanco from Mass, and James Wood made his debut last night in a 9-7 10-inning loss. Actually, the 10th inning, both top and bottom, were pretty wild. And he got up in the bottom of the 10th and was able to reach base on a walk. So he hit 6th last night. He played left field. Do you think that'll be the Davey plan for the rest of this year? Or do you think at some point he'll move into a spot, which I would imagine to be his future spot, which would be either hitting third or cleanup?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the plan for now. Like I said, he could play center field, but I don't think they want him playing center field every day. A lot of wear and tear out there. He's still getting used to the major leagues. He is perfectly capable of playing either corner. Of course, they have Lane Thomas in right, so left field is where he's probably going to fit defensively for the time being. And probably the rest of the season. Unless Jacob Young needs a day off, they can move him over to center. But, it's unfortunate. I mentioned, you know, they really wanted him to work on hitting left-handers, which he did. He did that. He did really well against lefties. So that's not really the issue. But it is kind of unfortunate the Mets are starting 3 straight left-handers in this series. So I think for right now, you're going to see him hit in the bottom half of the lineup, probably 6th. And then as he gets more acclimated to major league pitching, works his way up towards the top of the lineup. And, yeah, I can see him definitely hitting 3rd or 4th. I mean, I can see him, Davey, putting him right there in 3rd, right behind C.J. Lane, and then right in front of someone like Joey Vanessis or Jesse Winker to put them into, RBI situations. So for right now, left and bottom half of the lineup, 6th likely is probably where he's going to stay. But I can see him moving up, you know, maybe as soon as after the All-Star break.
Tell me real quickly what you think the plan with Dylan Cruz will be.
So Dylan Cruz, I mapped this out. Ideally he's on a similar path that James is. James only played, I think, like 51-ish, maybe a couple more games in AAA and was called up. Obviously this is Dylan's first taste of AAA. He just got promoted. He's got a little ways to go, but 50-ish plus games in AAA for him would put him, I think, near the end of August, right before a Nationals homestand I mapped out. So if he stays in that trajectory, you know, theoretically, September is a realistic goal for him to get called up to the majors. But I would not be surprised if they decide to wait until next year. It also kind of all depends how this team responds in the second half. You know, they are theoretically in a wild card chase. And if, you know, James Wood is the catalyst that they think that he can be and helps this team win more games in the second half and they stay in that race, you know, there might not be a reason to call up Dylan in that sense. But I think realistically, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he's up in September. It also wouldn't surprise me if they waited until next year and he is going to be maybe your starting center fielder out of spring training or something like that. But, you know, doing the math, it was kind of interesting to see how much time James put. Now, of course, James had put up way better numbers than Dylan has thus far in AAA. I mean, right. James, you know, was out of the gate with his head on fire. So, and Dylan hasn't quite done that yet. But Dylan is still holding his own and playing well and Rochester, so that is not a concern at all, and he's definitely capable of getting up there. It's just a matter of, you know, does he earn it like James does, and, you know, will he be able to do it in that short amount of time? I don't think there's a right or wrong to this question. You know, if he's up in September, great. If they have to wait till next year, that's okay too.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like, they've lost 6 of 7. They just can't seem to generate offense on nights where they get great starting pitching and vice versa. And look, the Mets have really gotten it together. They're actually at 500 now after that terrible start. And, you know, the Nats are kind of falling out of this thing. I would love to see them make a run here before the All-Star break to get back into it. But that leads me to this. So tell me, you know, so in the All-Star, I think it's the Futures game. The Nats will have significant participation. But before you get to that and explaining that and updating us on that, what about the All-Star participant from the Nats? Will it be C.J. Abrams?
I think C.J. Abrams, it's going to be a similar situation that we saw last year with Lane Thomas. Lane Thomas had the numbers, was definitely worthy of a selection, but there just wasn't room for him. And you also have to keep in mind that the All-Star game, much like every other All-Star game, is a popularity contest. So there are going to be other names that can get ahead of guys like Lane did last year and ahead of guys like CJ. CJ has the numbers that probably could qualify theoretically as All-Star caliber, but in terms of actual election to the game, like, I think there are just like a handful of other better named shortstops that are going to be selected to this game over him because of their name recognition, and they also deserve it. And CJ's path will be only probably as like a replacement if someone bows out or, you know, God forbid, gets hurt or something like that.
Bobby, thanks. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of your move. Better scheduling next time. You know, it's something that you might want to think about. I'm kidding, of course.
No, on a road trip. No, next time I'm going to plan to move when they're on the road.
Yeah, it's good to catch up. And Bobby, of course, a Nats insider for Masson, a local, went to Maryland, went to Gonzaga. At Bobby_Blanco on Twitter, on X. Talk to you soon, Bobby. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we're going to switch it around a little bit. Stephen Goff, who covers soccer for the Washington Post. I will tell you, in addition to watching the Nats last night, I did watch USA-Uruguay in a game that the U.S. needed to win, and needed to win by a goal minimum to qualify for the knockout round. They are out. It's a big deal in the soccer world that the U.S. men's soccer team did not advance out of the group stage at Copa America. We will talk to Stephen Goff when we come back from the Washington Post. Kevin Ciancio, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
James Wood went to high school at St. John's College High in D.C. for transferring to IMG Academy. 3-2 again on the way. Swung on, line drive, base hit through the hole into left center field. Jeff McNeil up with it. He'll play it back. Time will be called, and the baseball will go to James Wood, who does the shimmy shake to the Nationals dugout. Listen to these fans here in the nation's capital for James Wood.
That was the first at-bat for James Wood last night at Nats Park against the Mets. He was 1-for-4. He reached base 3 times. That single, walked once, and also reached on an error. Bobby Blanco covers the Nats for Masson. You can follow Bobby on X on Twitter at Bobby_Blanco, B-L-A-N-C-O. I wanted to ask you first and foremost, you know, the scene last night, I'm listening to a lot of the pregame and during the game, and it sounded like it was an unbelievable media turnout, A, and a real, you know, electric crowd for James Wood's debut. Describe it.
Yeah, it was. And I have to be completely honest with you. I actually wasn't there.
Maybe something we should have found out before we had you on, but that's okay,
yeah.
Bobby.
Well, my wife and I actually moved yesterday, and I knew as soon as we picked this date and then James Wood was activated off the IL that he was like, you know what, this is going to line up where he's going to make his debut at Nats Park, isn't it? And sure enough. But I was watching online. I was watching on Masson, and I heard a lot of the radio call as well. I mean, the crowd looked great. I mean, for all the reports, it looked like the Nationals did a really good job of one, letting the news get out early last week, allowing fans to buy tickets, you know, having the T-shirt giveaway, stuff like that. So I give the Nationals a lot of credit for letting fans enjoy this moment with them and with James, because the crowd did seem electric last night, even on the radio, even on TV. And yeah, the media frenzy was crazy. I mean, I know that most of the time you get pregame interviews inside the clubhouse. There were so many media members there that they had to pull James out into the hallway and do it in front of a banner because there were so many people there. And that just kind of shows the top level prospect that James is and the kind of hype that comes around him, not to mention the fact that he's sharing the field with CJ Abrams. Mackenzie Gore was on the mound, 3 central pieces to that Juan Soto deal from 2 years ago. So, yeah, James is the highest-ranked prospect in the Nats system. Some publications have him already as the number one prospect in all of baseball because Jackson Holliday has been hurt. He struggled in the majors. Paul Skeens is close to graduating by some standards with the Pirates. So you're looking at one of, if not the number one prospect in the entire sport, making his major league debut, and he flashed all the skills, right? I mean, it was really fun to watch. I know the loss kind of dampers the evening, but James did everything he could to help that team win the game. He just needs some help from his new teammates, right? I mean, he got on base so many times. That first single was a very impressive at-bat. He works the count full. He fouls off a pitch, and then he goes the other way against the lefty, which was the knock on him this year, was that they wanted him to hit lefties. And, of course, his first major league base hit is an opposite field single against a lefty. So that was really cool to see. The walk late in the game was an impressive at-bat as well. I think, Kevin, for me, the thing that really stood out, and watching it live on TV, was just the overall skill that he has, the chopper back to the mound that he runs down the baseline. The pitcher kind of, you know, he's so fast, he gets in the way of the
really
pitcher
is.
Almost. He's so fast. I mean, it's incredible to watch. And here's how fast he is. So he goes past first base. The ball gets past Pete Alonso at the bag. His helmet falls off. He actually tries to catch his helmet and put it back on before running to second. And there's a great shot from the Maston camera and the third base camera well, where you can see James, he has stopped his momentum. He's looking at the ball, and the right fielder already has the ball or is about to pick it up. And that's the moment he decided to break for a second, and he gets there pretty easily. I mean, the speed that he has in that moment to make that decision and then get to second base quickly and safely was just very impressive. And that I think that was the cool part of the night, was that he flashed all five of his tools that make him the best prospect in the sport.
Look, we may have buried the lead here. How was the move? How did the move go?
the move, you know what? I think I had a longer day working with the move than I would have if I was at Nats Park.
There's nothing worse than moving, right?
There's nothing worse than moving. We still got some boxes and stuff to put away throughout the course of the day, but yeah. I will be back at Nationals Park and saying hello to James tomorrow night. I can't wait. But, yeah, the move is slow but steady, and I think definitely harder than covering a baseball game.
You know, Bobby, you mentioned something, and I mentioned it to Denton at the beginning of the show. What was the deal with his helmet? It just, every movement, every swing, every, you know, run, the helmet would not stay on his head.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's, you know, C.J. Abrams kind of has the same.
Exactly.
It's all these guys that are just fast. You know, Lane Thomas sometimes, Jacob Young sometimes has an issue with it. I've actually asked Davey Martinez about this, and he just mentioned, you know, sometimes they wish they would just knock the helmet off and just run. Like, they don't, they worry so much about it. And it kind of slows them down. I think I've seen CJ get picked off or caught stealing at second, or maybe even like thrown out for a double a handful of times because he slows himself down trying to keep the helmet on. And Davey Martinez is like, just knock it off and run. Like, who cares? Like, it's allowed to fall off your head. You don't have to keep it on once you're running. So yeah, it is kind of a funny thing that this is they can't seem to keep the helmet on. And I do kind of wish at times they just like let it fall and keep playing. I know you want to be safe, and obviously the head is the most important part of your body to keep safe. You don't want to get hit or anything, but at the same time, if it's slowing you down and you have an easy stand up double, take it off.
Yeah, I think I said to Denton earlier, and I forget if it was on the air during the break, but I said, you know, C.J. Abrams has that issue a lot, too, in watching him. And I wonder if it's something that they think looks good. To me, last night with Wood, it actually appeared to be a distraction or, you know, a bit of an unnecessary diversion for him. You know, why should you be worried about after a swing and a miss catching your helmet or running and trying to affix the helmet to your head so it doesn't fall off? It seems kind of absurd in so many ways. But I'll tell you, you mentioned something, and I didn't mention this at the beginning. His size is obviously something that stands out. But, man, can he move for a guy his size? I mean, he is 6'7", close to 250, right?
Yep, 6'7", like 230 plus at least. And the way he – I mean, just watching it, I can't wait till he gets his first extra base hit, because you're going to see him go from first to second probably in the blink of an eye. I mean, he takes some unbelievably long strides for his size, and quickly too. I mean, it's not like slow – you know, sometimes you see like a 6'7", like forward in basketball, kind of a slow up and down the court. No, he is getting his feet up and down in a quick manner and getting there quickly. The athleticism, and that's the crazy thing too. He is that size. and he has the athleticism that could probably play every day at center field. The Nationals don't want him to do that right now. Also, they have arguably the best defensive center fielder in baseball and Jacob Young playing there every day. But James could play there every single day right now, and that's so much ground he covers, plus the base stealing potential, plus the extra base potential. I mean, he's one of those guys like C.J. Abrams that could turn a single into a double, no problem, which is just crazy to think that he has the same speed that C.J. has, and he might be like, half a foot taller.
Did he play? I know he played basketball at St. John's. Actually, the St. John's coach for several years was Sean McAloon, who then became the head coach at IMG. And he's an excellent, excellent high school basketball coach. I mean, I thought he was one of the best in the area when he was here, and he's probably considered to be one of the better coaches in the country. Did he play basketball at IMG?
Yeah, I'm a Gonzaga guy, so I try to forget his basketball time at St. John's. I think he might have played 1 year, his junior year. I think his senior year he switched to full-time baseball.
Okay. We are talking to Bobby. Yeah, we're talking to Bobby Blanco from Mass, and James Wood made his debut last night in a 9-7 10-inning loss. Actually, the 10th inning, both top and bottom, were pretty wild. And he got up in the bottom of the 10th and was able to reach base on a walk. So he hit 6th last night. He played left field. Do you think that'll be the Davey plan for the rest of this year? Or do you think at some point he'll move into a spot, which I would imagine to be his future spot, which would be either hitting third or cleanup?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the plan for now. Like I said, he could play center field, but I don't think they want him playing center field every day. A lot of wear and tear out there. He's still getting used to the major leagues. He is perfectly capable of playing either corner. Of course, they have Lane Thomas in right, so left field is where he's probably going to fit defensively for the time being. And probably the rest of the season. Unless Jacob Young needs a day off, they can move him over to center. But, it's unfortunate. I mentioned, they really wanted him to work on hitting left-handers, which he did. He did that. He did really well against lefties, so that's not really the issue. But it is kind of unfortunate the Mets are starting 3 straight left-handers in this series. So I think for right now, you're going to see him hit in the bottom half of the lineup, probably 6th. And then as he gets more acclimated to major league pitching, works his way up towards the top of the lineup. And, yeah, I can see him definitely hitting 3rd or 4th. I mean, I can see him, Davey, putting him right there in 3rd, right behind C.J. Lane, and then right in front of someone like Joey Vanessis or Jesse Winker to put them into, RBI situations. So for right now, left and bottom half of the lineup, 6th likely is probably where he's going to stay. But I can see him moving up, maybe as soon as after the All-Star break.
Tell me real quickly what you think the plan with Dylan Cruz will be.
So Dylan Cruz, I mapped this out. Ideally he's on a similar path that James is. James only played, I think, like 51-ish, maybe a couple more games in AAA and was called up. Obviously this is Dylan's first taste of AAA. He just got promoted. He's got a little ways to go, but 50-ish plus games in AAA for him would put him, I think, near the end of August, right before a Nationals homestand I mapped out. So if he stays in that trajectory, theoretically, September is a realistic goal for him to get called up to the majors. But I would not be surprised if they decide to wait until next year. It also kind of all depends how this team responds in the second half. They are theoretically in a wild card chase. And if, James Wood is the catalyst that they think that he can be and helps this team win more games in the second half and they stay in that race, there might not be a reason to call up Dylan in that sense. But I think realistically, it wouldn't surprise me if he's up in September. It also wouldn't surprise me if they waited until next year and he is going to be maybe your starting center fielder out of spring training or something like that. But, doing the math, it was kind of interesting to see how much time James put. Now, of course, James had put up way better numbers than Dylan has thus far in AAA. I mean, right. James, was out of the gate with his head on fire. So, and Dylan hasn't quite done that yet. But Dylan is still holding his own and playing well in Rochester. So that is not a concern at all. And he's definitely capable of getting up there. It's just a matter of, does he earn it like James does? And, will he be able to do it in that short amount of time? I don't think there's a right or wrong to this question. If he's up in September, great. If it has to wait till next year, that's okay too.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like, they've lost six of seven. They just can't seem to generate offense on nights where they get great starting pitching and vice versa. And look, the Mets have really gotten it together. They're actually at 500 now after that terrible start. And, you know, the Nats are kind of falling out of this thing. I would love to see them make a run here before the All-Star break to get back into it. But that leads me to this. So tell me, you know, so in the All-Star, I think it's the futures game. The Nats will have significant participation. But before you get to that and explaining that and updating us on that, what about the All-Star participant from the Nats? Will it be C.J. Abrams?
I think C.J. Abrams, it's going to be a similar situation that we saw last year with Lane Thomas. Lane Thomas had the numbers, was definitely worthy of a selection, but there just wasn't room for him. And you also have to keep in mind that the All-Star game, much like every other All-Star game, is a popularity contest. So there are going to be other names that can get ahead of guys like Lane did last year and ahead of guys like CJ. CJ has the numbers that probably could qualify theoretically as All-Star caliber, but in terms of actual election to the game, like, I think there are just like a handful of other better named shortstops that are going to be selected to this game over him because of their name recognition, and they also deserve it. And CJ's path will be only probably as like a replacement if someone bows out or, you know, God forbid, gets hurt or something like that.
Bobby, thanks. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of your move. Better scheduling next time. It's something that you might want to think about. I'm kidding, of course.
Yeah, on a road trip. No, next time I'm going to plan to move when they're on the road.
it's good to catch up. And Bobby, of course, a Nats insider for Masson, a local, went to Maryland, went to Gonzaga. At Bobby_Blanco on Twitter, on X. Talk to you soon, Bobby. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we're going to switch it around a little bit. Stephen Goff, who covers soccer for the Washington Post. I will tell you, in addition to watching the Nats last night, I did watch USA Uruguay in a game that the U.S. needed to win, and needed to win by a goal minimum to qualify for the knockout round. They are out. It's a big deal in the soccer world that the U.S. men's soccer team did not advance out of the group stage at Copa America. We will talk to Stephen Goff when we come back from the Washington Post. Kevin Ciancio, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, But with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.